Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Deva Nirguna. Nirguna took sannyas in 1974 and is a certified massage therapist, tantra teacher, astrologer, and tarot reader. Nirguna lives in a retreat estate in Guatemala and offers a variety of spiritual practices. I'm so happy to have Nirguna on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Nirguna, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Swaram. Hi.
Great. So, to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
You know, it's a really interesting story. I qualified as an architect in London. You know, I'm AAA. I'm astrologer, artist, and architect. And I finished my degree, and I was on my way to travel to see the Great Pyramids. And I somehow got diverted to Istanbul. And that felt to me completely different. Istanbul is like the doorway to the east, and there I am, this young guy on the edge of Europe. And I walked into the Blue Mosque in Istanbul. And, you know, at this time in the Middle East, there was no war. And sitting there, glowing like the sun, was this gorgeous woman with blonde hair dressed in orange in this Blue Mosque, surrounded by, you know, guys praying. And I walked straight up to her, and I'm not like that. I said, "What are you doing here?" And she just stared up at me, and the whole place kind of went a little bit like home. And she gave me this book, which was I Am the Gate by Osho, by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. She said, "Go outside, read it, and I'll come out and have some tea." So I opened this book and said, "This makes so much sense." And she told me he was in India, you know, and I was pulled then because, you know, I'm in college in London. The Beatles went to India. We can get on buses and go. And I went, "Oh, India, what is this?" I went home and my sister got married. And then pretty soon after that, on a full moon, I just got this urge. We were living in a community house. I've got to go to India. And before very long, I was taking off back to Istanbul. And I think it's interesting how I got to Osho, that I went overland through all of these countries, you know, that then were at peace. So I went past through Turkey, past Ararat. I went, you know, saw all the mosques in Iran. I crossed over to the Sufi heartland, you know, in Herat, and had wonderful experiences there. I had a travel companion with me, and we experienced, you know, some pretty profound meetings with souls, but it was all very peaceful. And then we crossed through the Khyber Pass. We went through Kabul, you know, eating strawberries and ice cream, and went down through the Khyber Pass and crossed over into India to the Golden Temple, where the Sikhs put us up for 3 days. And this was before the temple was bombed. And we were there in Mother India. And then my friend said, "You know, I need to go to the beach." And I said, "I need to go to the mountains." And we, just like that, we split, you know. We had no internet. I never saw her again after that. But I had this address with me of Rajneesh from this first connections. And so now I was on my own, and I was on this bus up to see to a hill station in the Himalayas. And I got off the bus, and there is a Tibetan going, "Tashi dele, tashi dele, come follow me." And I went with him to this hotel, and I'd asked on the bus, "We're going to Sri Rajneesh, where are you?" And I walked into this hotel, and there is another woman sitting, Ma Yoga Dao, dressed in orange, going, oh, you know. And she said, "Yeah, you go now to Pune, and you go and stay at the Mobos Hotel. And a meditation camp starts in 3 weeks. And so my journey there was through overland, like a pilgrimage, through all of the different traditions. So I always felt with Osho, I came from his old connections, like in Tibet. He always felt like I was part of a family there. So I was introduced a little bit in the Himalayas there to meditation. There was a Goenka course. I knew nothing about this. But I found my way on a bus down to the Mobos Hotel down there in Pune. This is November 74. And I knocked on the door. It was late at night. And there was a Swami dressed in orange saying, "Oh, yeah, meditation camp. Sure, find a room here. But, you know, he talks tomorrow. Do you want to come?" And I went, "Sure, yeah, let's go." I was dressed beautifully in blue. So the next morning they picked me up, went in this tuk-tuk, you know, arrived on this little bedroom porch, back porch. And there were about 20 of us. And then this door opened and in walked Osho. And this man was shining. And I didn't know that you could shine. And I started in my mind, "How do you do that?" And he sat down, looked at me, and then the answers started to come. So that was my journey towards Osho. It was kind of magical and a pilgrimage in a sense through all the traditions. And that journey of the magic of it all has kind of stayed with me this whole life, somehow trusting connections, asking a question, the universe brings it to you, you know. So there I was, and I remember my friend Mahari, she took me by the arm after that lecture. I still have that lecture. They recorded it. I listened to it quite recently, and she took me out of the thing and said, "You know, you can take sannyas." And I didn't know what that was, but she explained, and I said, "Sure." So 3 days later, you know, I walk on my own down to the back porch. There's Osho, sits me down. And another Swami comes in. He starts to talk to him about auras and things around the... I went, "This is so interesting." And after 20 minutes or so, he looked at me and said, "You ready?" I said, "Yes." And then something happened so deep. And I remember coming back with some semblance of my name. But interestingly, the first words he said to me are, "No love, no devotion." So here I am doing a Love Osho talk. But that was his first input to me, was no love, no devotion. And, you know, many years later, when he answered a question to me in Pythagoras' series, he explained that, but in this way, you know, he said, "You know, you come here directly to me. It was, you come here and you listen to great music, you know, and it strikes a chord in you, but it's not your music. Go make your music. So don't get attached to me. No love, no devotion." You know, so that was kind of the journey, how I started. And of course, you know, we can all dissolve in that Sufi path of love and devotion. But for me, that was a particular message. And I think that's what's so interesting about each of our connections with Osho in person. You know, that we have these one-on-one special stories. And he will say something to one person and a different thing to the next person. And of course, they become recorded and they become books and they become words. But the primary experience of that is this direct transmission, you know, from the master. So I was always a guide in Pune. It's the only thing I ever did. And I would come and go. I was not part of any kind of fixed establishment there. But I was doing this guarding job for the Pythagoras series after many years. Now there's 10,000 people coming to Buddha Hall. And, you know, and I know I'm standing outside the Buddha Hall And I know Osho is going to come past in his car, and there's just me and him. And he's going to namaste me, and I'm going to be gone. And that's what happened. And I wrote something at the end of that day, like, thank you for the delicate synthesis. You know, great joy arises, understanding that we have no purpose. Life is purposeless. So the next day I'm sitting in lecture, I'm not guarding that day. And he starts to read. I think I'm the first question. He goes, Deva Nirguna. And at this moment, he fixed me with his left eye. It was his left eye. And he reads out that question. But from me, from the inside, coming from my belly, coming up, out through my eyes, almost back to him, but from my belly, are a number of questions come up, quite formed, like, what's behind Einstein's law of gravity? What happened in that car accident? I fell up a mountain once. And this kind of food through his left eye, he came. And then he starts to talk and says, you know, what I just said, you know, you come here and listen to great music, but it's not your music. Go find your music. And then he starts to talk. Beyond Einstein's law of gravity is the law of grace. And so he goes on. So this incredible experience of direct transmission, of connectivity, eye to eye. This is something that is, you know, so special to each of us who is there. And I'm so happy, Swaran, that you give us this opportunity, because all of the words that are written down read so beautifully. He's such, you know, a perfect orator of things. But the actual experience of what was going on behind that was very specific. This direct transmission from master to, you know, to devotee. So, yeah.
So Nirguna, yeah, I think this is an excellent point, and the life to dig a little bit deeper, because most people know Osho, the public Osho, the public persona. You know, all his books, all his words are available. There are videos, there are audio recordings, and that's great. It's the first time in history that we have an enlightened master so available like Osho. But at the same time, it's not exactly the same thing as being there and getting that transmission, which I think is impossible. But I want to know, for you, what's the difference between Osho, the public persona, and Osho, the private person, especially if you had private meetings with him?
Well, I only had, you know, darshans like everybody else, but, you know, but that, you know, specific one-on-one with him was so important. I remember I was having a darshan, and I've been doing, you know, we've been doing meditations for years and dynamics in the morning. And I went to him. I said, I've got a hard head. He says, why have you got a hard head? I said, women, life, relationships, you know. He said, well, stop doing dynamic, you know, and do this. And then he just waved his fingers at me, you know, and this, just bring the energy down into your heart, put it out through your hands. And something like that has become a transmission, you know, for my whole life. Oh, my God, yeah. We can just pull it into our hearts. We can put it out through our hands. You know, we can make that massage, or we can make that music and things like that. So the tremendous fortunateness of being in the presence of a teacher, of a master like that, and the transmissions that go on, you know, how is this useful for other people? I don't really know how to say that, other than to maybe it can illustrate what an amazingly vast being Osho was, and that comes through, you know, like embers of a fire in all of the words. But the direct transmission somewhere is still available, you know. So maybe this would stimulate people to go deeper into their meditation, to ask. You know, I'm living here in Guatemala for 20 years, and Prema is my partner here, Mahadeva Prema. And I was running a meditation here, I think it was chakra breathing or something. And she had this whole meeting with Osho during the meditation. She got her name. She, you know, he talked to her distinctly, you know. So I am not sure how this transmission works, but at the highest level, for instance, for me, was I would get this amazing smell from Osho. Like something would go on. I'd be really aware of being very present about something. And then this smell was around, like a little from Osho, you know. So this personal one-on-one, this sense of this huge connectivity with something that is vast, I think it points us towards a trust in existence, actually. You know, the nature will take us, the Tao will take us, you know, which brings us to where we are right now with this huge timeout, for instance, on the planet, you know, this kind of synchronistic moment. And there's something about that transmission around Osho. He had this force field around him that it felt like magic was happening. So,
wow, that is amazing. And I know that you're also an astrologer, so I'd love to hear something from you regarding this very delicate moment we're going through. We are recording this on the 22nd of March, and most of the world is in a lockdown with this coronavirus spreading. So, but before we get there, I know that it's hard to put into words, but it sounds like you're very good with words. So let's give it a try. What would you, what would you say is the most important thing that you learned from Osho?
Trust in existence. The existence wants you to flower. It wants you to achieve yourself. You know, you're here in a body. He finished a very long talk to me in that Pythagoras reading, question lecture series by saying, become Zorba the Buddha. He said to me, Zorba the Buddha. So this sense of we are in a body. And this amazing temple that it is, you know, and if you can relax into being in this body, to enjoy this body, then all the other things will grow and flower out of that as you go up. You know, that's why he needed to clean out, you know, the bottom chakras, the sexuality. That's why I got into Tantra with Margot. How that energy from below, like a flower, just comes up, becomes your heart. Then that can come out through your hands, as he pointed out to me, as healing. It comes up to your throat. Comes up and it expands through the top of your head as an essence, as a smell. There was another teaching. It's like this. It's like essentialness. You know, so this space of being present, totally present in our body, part of nature, being in the present. And then the other thing that he pointed out to me was teachings on death. You know, this was a deeper process of practice, you know. So the first time that I had a Satori, actually he told me in that first meeting when he gave my name, you're going away in a few days. And I said, no, I'm not. And a few days later, that Satori happened and I went away, you know. I thought, and so I got this view of the wholeness of things. I am not, it is. And of course, then I came back. And then we spent the next several years working on this process. And so this sense of the vastness of existence, and those seeds that planted then at those times have grown, you know, so more of those experiences, sitting on a mountain top, just looking over a valley, and suddenly I'm disappearing. I'm screaming, you know, and trying to put myself back in my belly. It was all going out from my horror. Everything of me was disappearing, and then feeling so foolish afterwards, going, my God, you've been in training for this for so long. You know, and here you are in terror, putting everything back in. And soon after that, having a dream with chasing the Buddha on a motorbike. And suddenly the Buddha's in front of him. He's like Keystone Cops. And he goes over temple steps in the dream into the void. And I go over laughing. Oh, we can go into this vastness with laughter. That's why he used so many jokes. And then the last time I saw Osho, just a few months before he passed, he just came out to namaste us all. But there was a Tibetan that they put on a little lecture that night, and he said, the jewels of humanity right now are the Tibetan teachings on death. So here they have the map to death. So the two things, personally, be in this body, enjoy this body to its fullest, you know, do your practice. For me, it's chakra breathing or something like that almost every day for 40 years, and it never gets boring. And trust existence as you grow and flower and grow out as you go towards this process of death, this time out. We are so fragile, I think. That's the teachings we get in right now with the coronavirus. Look how fragile we are, our institutions, you know, our sense of what we need to do on the planet and how we are in touch with the planet, you know, this fragility of who we are, you know. So those two things, being in the body, enjoying the body for its full potential. You know, when you saw Osho walk, I saw him once, I was God, and he walked up to me and he just kind of flowed. It's like he barely touched the ground. You know, so amazing, the energy coming up through him, you know, and going out. And at the same time, he was bringing in. He was bringing in from all of the teachers, from the Dharma, Lao Tzu, Jesus, all of these transmissions were coming in. He was a representative of the whole.
Just to summarize what you just said, that two things that you learn from Osho are trust in existence and death, essentially, dealing with death. And I think this is absolutely meaningful for the moment we are living now. So how are you living this particular time with the coronavirus, of course, situation, considering what you've learned from Osho? What would be the advice for people, from someone who had the opportunity to learn from an enlightened master?
Well, being an astrologer, and you know, that came from Osho, tarot and astrology. I asked him questions on this, and he lectured on this and said, there's a great foundational truth here in astrology, and that pushed me along. And the same with tarot. And he said, but the temple of astrology has been ruined, you know. And since he died, actually, there's been a huge revival in astrology. People went in and read the old texts from the Hellenistic times and the Arab and things, and there's been a great resurrection of the temple of astrology. And of course, astrology gives you a timing. It's like reading the weather patterns. And we've evolved more. We have technology now. We've discovered more planets. So our viewers evolve very, very much so. And so I could look, when I look through my ephemeris, which is like the musical score of where all the planets are, I identified this time, saying, my God, look at all of this going on. And I kind of set myself up for this. So I live in a very beautiful place with a retreat place where we have a lot of studios and things for music and things for art. And I am so comfortable here. So for me, I'm always in lockdown. You know, and we live with a community of very heartful people, the Mayans. So for everybody else out there, so for me, this is, you know, super creative time. And looking at the astrology, that really is what it's about. You can we're seeing walls going up everywhere around. We could talk about this in terms of Saturn. We could talk about Pluto in terms of the global impact, Neptune in terms of practice. All of these things have got tone and conversation in terms of the language of astrology. This is happening in Capricorn so much. And Osho had so much energy in Capricorn as well. He had so much presence about building structural awareness. And so I would say for everybody now, it's a time of practice. The solutions for this have to be on the inside. We have to consume less. You know, the planet, we are part of the Tao. We are not separate. Huge time out. The planet can't breathe. Now a virus that's stopping you breathing. Just cut the supply chains. Can't consume. Boundaries, walls. So at this time, it's a super creative time to try and vision. We could talk moving forwards. We have a potentiality coming of how we can live in a new way. So how would that be for you, given this intensity of what's going on? Why are you here essentially? What is this about? You know, can you go deep in practice and meditation? The answer is not going to be consuming more. It has to be on the inside. It's this very body is the Buddha. So go online, look up, you know, practices, chakra breathing, whatever you feel. Breath work, I feel, is super important. You know, yoga and the things of fitness in the body, great. They increase the capacity of the body to accept energy. You know, it's not can you become enlightened? It's can you actually take it? Do you have the capacity without fusing? You know, it's tremendous energy. But breath, that's to me, is the key. The coronavirus is about, and corona is the crown. It means the crown, seventh chakra, connections to the whole. It's about breath, and that's where, you know, the pneumonia comes in and all of these things. So accessing your breath, stopping the mind, going in. It's really what Osho said about Tantra. As he said, you know, Tantra is the one experience, the one practice in which there's no priest or politician. Existence trusts you to become what you're supposed to flower into. So this is a moment of Tantra for you to experience yourself. And of course, Tantra starts first with the body. And then he goes to opening the senses, becoming aware of the beauty that's around you. That's why the old yogis could sit in their caves and be surrounded by that. So we're all in our caves now. Open your senses to everything that's going on. The hairs, as your breath comes through your nostrils, open your senses. And then examine and use your mind. Look at where we've got to. How do we get here? What's going on? How can I change? How can I become part of community, the Dharma, the satsang? How can I connect in this more healthy way? Because we can't continue like this. That's I would say, some steps. So being home, creating your own walls of practice, we're putting boundaries. This is very much Saturn builds things. Well, build your practice right now. Build your vision. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really resonates with me a lot. And, you know, I'm Italian, so I just want to clarify that it's very tragic what's happening in Italy specifically. Everywhere in the world, but in Italy, thousands of people are dying. So that's really sad and tragic. But, you know, having said that, I think we can take this as a great opportunity to really change the way we are going, because, you know, I think it's almost a message from existence is telling us, you know, stop and change direction, and the best way is to go in. And it really, it's funny what you're saying with the lockdown, that you know, basically you are in a prolonged lockdown. And I've been looking at my life, and that's what's happening in the last years. More and more, I feel I see my life going more and more into a lockdown. And the way I'm living now in the last few weeks is not different from what I've been doing in the last few months.
No, exactly.
Every meditator eventually comes to that point, right?
Right, and now it's a forced lockdown. You have to look, you know. So to give people tools, you know, we had a big online meeting yesterday that I joined. Somebody invited me, and we just talked, you know, everybody from their cave, and we got to connect. What you're doing here, where this podcast goes, is going to be so important, you know. The solution, the journey from Osho was always to the inside, into the depths, into the silence, into the love, and into the laughter. That's what I got, the teachings on death. That's the only things we have in that expansion of our being, you know, is we have love, we have laughter, and we have silence. So, coming into that kind of resting place inside. And there's a, you know, I'm noticing even here where we live in very great communion with nature, but the nature is kind of going, aha, you know, now there's wildlife is starting to take over the cities a little bit. Where are all the people gone? Oh, let's have a look around here. Fish swimming up the canals in Venice. So clearly this is a retuning with the Tao, with the nature. You know, we have to reestablish a better relationship with the nature. Huh?
Yeah, nature is breathing. It's perhaps, you know, we human, as you mentioned, this virus is specifically attacking the respiratory system. But at the same time, paradoxically, the nature started breathing because of less pollution. So that's
right. Yeah, so when you see this from this kind of bigger Taoist view, and I think that's what the astrology points at, it's not like something is making you do something. I think one of the basic principles of astrology is that we're part of the Tao. And if we look at this moment, like your birth moment, that's what the Tao was doing, called you at this moment of birth. And it's kind of like a note. So we can look at these notes. That's why I like to look at astrology in terms of music, and the story of the music of these last few months have been, it's almost cartoon like in the astrology, how you can, oh yeah, of course, and then this and then that and now this, oh my god, you know. But there are some interesting doorways opening up down the line. And without getting too technical, it's a movement into Aquarius, into air, into communication, into humanity, into the air of things, the breath of things. So we've got some doorways and opportunities coming our way. And, you know, the darkest time is before the dawn. Huh? So I remember Osho saying in those Pythagoras lectures, we have 25 years to sort this out. We really, in the next 25 years are critical, and it's become super critical. So, yeah, this is where we are. And I don't want to go too technically into things, but there's a very, very nice 7-year possibility of an emergence, you know, especially for people in their 20s and 30s as they run into their power. If we can help them with practice, with meditation, and not just the smartphone, you know, where are the wise apps on your phone? You know, the meditation apps, the practice of things. So, you know, I feel super fortunate to have had these transmissions from such a great teacher as Osho. But when I went to see Osho, you know, it's like that river of spirituality in the West was pretty dense, almost like frozen. Now everybody talks about, has the language of spirituality, is aware of it. So I see that the whole river of possibilities is huge. And Osho's vision, you know, as he was so strong with his Capricorn, it's kind of, now's the time. It's show up time.
You have developed in so many different ways. You know, you are an artist, an architect, meditation and tantra teacher, massage therapist. Clearly, you like astrology, tarot reader, and probably something more. So among all those interests, is that what's your biggest passion, and how do you transmit what you have learned from Osho to the new generation?
It always happens in the moment. Right now, strangely enough, I'm sitting in front of a computer and I have a paintbrush in my hand. And I picked it up off my desk, you know, and I'm looking at this and I know there's a painting coming. I think it's to live a creative life. And to do that, you have to catch the moment. You have to catch the poem or the song that's coming along. Or the painting that wants to, this is how it works for me. And watching Osho, just being so utterly present, you know, about everything, then things just start to flow through you. Of course, you increase your skill set through practice. That's what practice is. Whether it's, I've painted now, you know, a lot, so I've become better. But recently I started to play guitar and that became my passion. And this all requires you to structure, give your life space to flow, to be creative. So that's a, you know, quite an art. How can I be responsible, take care of my kids, pay for this and that, do a podcast, travel around the world, buy the tickets, and yet still, you know, leave space for this creative flow to come through. We are a tremendous moment in humanity. For us to be in that kind of sense of presence and flow in the olden days, you would go and sit in a cave because you couldn't take too much. You just had to be in that place, Bodhidharma, sitting for years and years. But now we've developed to the place where you can be present, you know, with your family, you know, you can be present, you know, with that brush in your hands on the canvas and see what comes. And then something happens. So that big presence that you have strikes a chord. Somebody buys the painting, or somebody wants to build the building, or somebody says, thank you for that reading. It really resonated in me. So this sense of becoming your unique one is where the universe wants us to go. We're rich enough now as a society to do this. So as long as your belly is full and you're safe and you have hygiene, that's another interesting thing. You know, we're all washing our hands and cleaning everything up and looking at our cleanliness around ourselves. And then as you go in meditation, see what wants to come out. You know, first you breathe, but then maybe a song. You want to make a song. That's breath in expression. So what's your expression? You know, so none of this is direct. This is seeds of things that are for me that have now grown. You know, go find your own music. Don't come fall in love with me. Go find your own music, your own development.
Yeah, this is very beautiful, and I feel it's so authentic coming out of you. Picture you sitting there with that brush in your hand and this painting just coming out of nothingness. So it's really a beautiful image. So you mentioned a few times during the interview about your place in Guatemala, and it sounds like an amazing retreat center. So just give us a sense of what happens there.
It's a very small place. You know, people have come here to write a book or to make a movie. It's kind of a project place. You know, we have a lot of facility here at the lake. You should think of the lake as one big eccentric community. So, for instance, I go down to a much bigger retreat place down the road here, and I go and read astrology. People come in every week, you know, 20, 30 people come to do a group. Right, not now, but that happens. So this is a very strong power spot. So here I'm kind of the experimental little retreat place. You know, I run meditations here, Osho meditations, but really it's more like an artist's place to come. You have a project that you want to do. And then in this kind of quiet place, we're almost up in the bird canopy, but very well developed comfortable place. Then you can have the view of the rest of the lake. We have wonderful therapists all over the lake here for healing and different kind of modalities. Because Guatemala is not very functional as a country, it's allowed us to do things. I've built everything here. We never had any permits. We didn't have to put in any permits. Nobody bothered. That's why the architect in me came down here. I followed Cerrito and Anando, who were, you know, well known in Pune, Cerrito, for trying to build the new commune. They said, hey, come down here. We've got no regulations. You know, we can do what we like. So in this kind of environment, people have developed alternative building methods. We have organic farms, you know, happening around the lake. So I'm just a pinpoint within a very big experiment that's going on here at Lake Atitlan, which is a tremendous power spot in itself anyhow, and so beautiful. So, you know, people can get in touch with me and see if we have some space. Right now, everything's locked down, but that's essentially what I do, you know, is put up for 3 or 4 people. They can come and stay and work on projects. And then, so that's what we have here.
That's amazing. It's a really unique concept. First time I hear that, and it's very inspirational. And also I love this idea that there are no regulation in Guatemala, which is a fertile ground for creativity to flourish. And mm-hmm. you know, every country where there are too many regulation, like Germany or Singapore, where I've lived for the past couple of years, there is very little creativity. And then you get countries where the regulations are loose, and then you have more creativity. So, but then they are chaotic and they dysfunctional. So it's always hard to find the balance.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, here, you know, like for this virus, everybody's in lockdown because they know if it gets in, we've got no system to deal with it. Very much on the edge. You live very much in the moment, and this discovery of yourself, you know, that's always ongoing. Isn't that when it becomes a mystery, you know, that you keep on discovering more, and the more that you grow, because isn't that the definition of growth, is you go from where you know to where you don't know? So you don't know what is going to be the next painting, but you trust somehow that it will come. So when we live in these kind of places, we're always on the edge.
yeah, but you live life more, so it's...
You do.
Yeah. Okay, look, Nirguna, we are heading towards the end. I have 3 final questions, but before that, just in case, I want to make sure that you said everything you wanted to say. So is there anything else that you feel you would like to share before we finish?
Be present for every little detail that's happening around you right now, because, you know, notice nature around you, even if it's just the ant that's walking in front of you, you know. So just try and be in your senses and really present. And you'll notice that as you go deeper into your belly, you get very comfortable with this place where you are with yourself. That's all I think I really want to say.
Okay, wonderful. So I've got 3 final questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
I get up, you know, Premer and I are here. We usually get up around 4 or 5, you know. So, and I have a meditation pyramid outside, and I go out and I usually look at the stars and take in the scene because we can see this. I'm an astrologer and I like to commune out there with the celestial. And then we will usually do a breathwork practice. Like this morning we did something from Jeru, who was there, or Santosh in Pune One, and we did a quantum light breath this morning. So we will do some kind of breathwork routine, and then I will have a tea, and then I will start to do my connecting with clients online and things, and because I'm very clear first things in the morning. And then that is probably taking me through till 9 o'clock, and then, okay, what's the day bringing now? Everybody else is awake. So I usually do get most of my day done before 9 o'clock.
Wonderful. That's great. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
I like chakra breathing. And, I kind of do a little bit of kundalini shaking first, but I do like chakra breathing because, you go through each of the chakras and you bring the energy up. So it's very much like a flower, like a plant. You're bringing the energy up. And within that, because I guide it sometimes, you have colors for the chakras, sounds for the chakras. And so you are building up a body of breath, but also if you see the colors in each chakra, a body of light, almost like your rainbow body. And then when you build it up, after one round of chakra breathing, there's three bells, and then you bring down from above another energy that water falls in. So I love this simplicity of the gesture of the breath, all going up, clearing the body, and then bringing in something bigger and lighter and newer and down through the body. And I never get bored doing chakra breathing.
Yeah, it's a lovely meditation. Yes, I subscribe to that. So last question is, you lead the OSH experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
His presence is still there. I can still kind of see the world through his eyes. He gave me that gift, and sometimes that comes in, that tremendous sense of wonder of existence. I remember after one darshan, he just wandered out into the garden with Vivek and was just staring at the stars. And there was this sense of his own wonder of existence. And so keeping, that childlike wonder so that you can open to the mystery of it all the time is where I see through his eyes.
Wow, that is very poetic, very beautiful.
So thank you so much for all of this, what you're doing. It's really important.
Well, it's my absolute pleasure. Well, thank you so much for being part of the Love Osho podcast. That's the end, Irguna. And I really wish to be able to come and visit you in your beautiful artistic retreat place. Sounds amazing. So I send you lots of love and a big hug.
If you can, just put a link or two up there for me so people can get in touch. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll link your place into the show notes.
Thank you so much, and lots of love to you, man.
Bye now. Lots of love. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.